Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lin, Katie Weaver, and Anna Mateo. Later, Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today. But first, here is Brian Lin.
Orlando gunman Omar Mateen called himself an Islamic soldier and praised God in Arabic during the attack at the Pulse gay nightclub, according to 911 call transcripts released Monday. The Federal Bureau of Investigation released parts of the transcripts of calls Mateen made during the June 12th shooting. Audio was not made public. Officials said it would be too painful for victims of the shooting and their families to hear. FBI Special Agent Ron Hopper said the calls showed the gunman acted in a chilling, calm, and deliberate manner. "I let you know I'm in Orlando and I did the shootings," Mateen said in his first call to a 911 dispatcher at 2:35 a.m., about 30 minutes after he began shooting. During the call, the killer also spoke Arabic to the dispatcher and said, "Praise be to God and prayers, as well as peace be upon the Prophet of God." Mateen was shot dead by police during the attack on the popular gay nightclub that left 49 people dead and 53 injured. The attack was the worst mass shooting in modern U.S. history. The transcripts left out the names of groups and individuals Mateen praised during the calls. But authorities previously said he pledged allegiance to Islamic State and its leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. Special Agent Hopper said the names were left out to avoid giving credibility and publicity to other attackers. He said, "We see no value in putting those individuals' names back out there. We're trying to prevent future acts from happening again, and for cowards like this one, people like that influence them." U.S. Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan criticized the decision to edit the transcripts and called on the Justice Department to release the full text. "Selectively editing this transcript is preposterous. We know the shooter was a radical Islamist extremist inspired by Islamic State," Ryan said in a statement. "We also know he intentionally targeted the LGBT community. The administration should release the full, unredacted transcript so the public is clear-eyed about who did this and why." At 2:48 a.m., Mateen began one of three conversations with crisis negotiators. During these calls, he identified himself as an Islamic soldier. He again pledged his allegiance to Islamic State and demanded an end to U.S. bombing in Syria and Iraq, saying that was why he was out here right now. When the negotiator asked what he had done, Mateen answered, "No, you already know what I did." The transcripts also provide some new information about the timeline for the attack. Within 6 minutes of the first emergency call to police at 2:02 a.m. that shots were fired, Orlando Police Department officers arrived at the nightclub and exchanged gunfire with Mateen. A SWAT team was called to the scene at 2:18 a.m. About 2 hours later, officers pulled an air conditioning unit out of the window at the nightclub and helped some people escape. At 4:29 a.m., victims told police Mateen had threatened to put four explosive vests on people within 15 minutes. He also told police he had put explosives in a vehicle outside the nightclub. "You people are going to get it, and I'm going to ignite it if they try to do anything stupid," he said. No bombs or vests were found. At 5:02 a.m., SWAT officers and a hazardous materials team broke through a wall of the nightclub with an armored vehicle. At 5:15, Orlando police said they had killed Mateen. The FBI said that during the 3 hours between the initial gun battle with Mateen and the final assault by SWAT, no shots were fired inside the nightclub. During this time, police said they were going inside to rescue as many victims as possible. I'm Brian Lynn.
Iranian state media say intelligence officials have stopped a terrorist plot in the country. The reports say it was one of the biggest attacks ever planned against the capital, Tehran, and other provinces in the Islamic Republic. In a statement, the intelligence ministry said it had arrested several suspects and seized bombs and ammunition. Officials are questioning the suspects. The statement provided few other details. Iran's Supreme National Security Council chief reportedly said the attack was planned for the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Iran's state-run IRNA news agency reported the intelligence ministry said the attack had been set for the anniversary of the death of the Prophet Muhammad's wife, Khadija. Iranians held small ceremonies on Thursday in honor of the anniversary. The IRNA report called those who had been arrested Wahhabi Takfiris. Takfiri is an insulting word in the Arabic and Farsi languages for Muslims who accuse others of being non-believers. Iranian officials often use the word when they talk about supporters of the Sunni militant Islamic State terrorist group. Wahhabism is a very conservative form of Islam practiced mostly in Saudi Arabia. Iran is a Shiite Muslim country. It has been fighting the Islamic State and helping both Syria and Iraq fight the group. Tensions have been growing between Iran and Saudi Arabia since January. That month, Saudi officials executed a Shiite Muslim clergyman who had criticized the government. Iranians protested the killing in Tehran, setting fire to the Saudi embassy there. Recently, Iran announced it would not be sending people to Saudi Arabia for the Hajj pilgrimage. It said Saudi Arabia did not meet its requests for better security for Iranian visitors. I'm Anna Mateo.
The president of the European Union says members must deal with dissatisfaction in Europe, whether Britain decides to leave the EU or not. Donald Tusk spoke Monday in Lisbon, Portugal. According to the Associated Press, he said, "Whatever its result is going to be, we must take a long, hard look on the future." He said, "We would be foolish if we ignored such a warning signal as the UK referendum." The popular vote, or referendum, will take place on June 23rd. British citizens will vote on whether their country will remain an EU member. Dissatisfaction in the EU has been growing every year among longtime members, such as the Netherlands and France. New Eastern European members, such as Poland and Hungary, have also seen anti-EU feelings grow. Tusk said, "There are more signals of dissatisfaction with the Union coming from all of Europe, not only from the UK." The EU's biggest economies, Germany and France, hope that British citizens will vote to remain in the Union. German Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier said Europe would, in his words, lose more than just a country. We would be losing the history and traditions of Great Britain in the European Union. He said, Europe would be much poorer if Britain leaves. France's foreign minister spoke to reporters at an EU foreign ministers meeting in Luxembourg Monday. Jean-Marc Ayrault noted the importance of the vote for all of Europe, not only Britain. In his words, all Europeans are looking to the British people because we have, history reminds us, a long life in common. British Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond also spoke Monday. He said, there will be no going back if Britain decides to leave the European Union. He said, Britain could never rejoin the EU except on terms that would not be acceptable to the country. He said such terms could include sharing a common EU currency or taking part in the Schengen Agreement for passport-free travel. British public opinion appears to be turning toward staying in the EU, especially after the murder last week of British lawmaker Joe Cox. The Labour Party politician had been an opponent of the Brexit effort and a supporter of refugees and immigrants. The marketing company ComRes in London told VOA that support between the sides is about equal. However, the head of the company, Andrew Hawkins, said the movement to leave lost some support after the killing. Both sides in the referendum stopped campaigning after the deadly attack. I'm Katie Weaver.
Four people are displaced from their homes every minute, according to the United Nations. A report by the UN Refugee Agency said 65.3 million people became or remained displaced from their homes in 2015, setting a new post-World War II record. That is more people than the populations of the United Kingdom, France, or Italy. The report said that if those 65.3 million persons were a nation, they would make up the 21st largest in the world. The report was released on Monday, which was World Refugee Day. The report listed three major reasons for the increase in displaced people. Number one, conflicts last longer. The conflicts in Somalia and Afghanistan are now in their third and fourth decades. Number two, many refugees come from Syria, where a civil war is now in its fifth year. Conflicts are also continuing in South Sudan, Yemen, Burundi, Ukraine, and Central African Republic. Number three, it is harder to find homes for refugees, partly because of political opposition. Filippo Grandi, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, said the situation is sad and dangerous for millions of refugees, many of them children. Each day, another refugee tragedy is played out in the media, of children, mothers, and fathers losing their lives in a desperate bid to escape violence, Grandi said. In the face of these tragedies, he said, divisive statements continue to be made by political leaders in some countries. But it is not hopeless, he said. Many people and communities are opening their homes to those victimized by war and other tragedies. The UN report says that about half of the world's refugees are children. Many, almost 100,000, were separated from their parents. In Europe and the United States, some political leaders are warning that accepting immigrants from Syria increases the risk of terrorism. A new report from the Pew Research Center highlighted the problems in Syria. It said that about 6 in 10 Syrians are now displaced from their homes because of the civil war. Many are in refugee camps in Jordan and other countries, looking to settle in Europe, the United States, and Canada.
Donald Trump's campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, is leaving. The campaign did not say why Lewandowski was dismissed, but the Associated Press reported that Lewandowski's poor relationship with Republican leaders was the reason. Trump is the likely Republican nominee against Democrat Hillary Clinton in the general election for president this fall. Lewandowski had been with Trump since the start of the campaign a year ago. Lewandowski was behind the idea that the best campaign strategy was to let Trump be Trump. During the Republican primaries, Trump's campaign spent little money on staff, advertising, or organization. The campaign relied on news coverage of Trump's controversial statements, his followers, and his celebrity to win. Lewandowski often traveled with the candidate. At one campaign event in Florida, Lewandowski grabbed a female reporter and was charged with a misdemeanor. The charge was later dropped. Trump spokeswoman Hope Hicks told the New York Times Lewandowski will no longer be working with the campaign. She paid tribute to his hard work and dedication and wished him the best. Trump won enough delegates to secure the Republican nomination for president. The party is expected to nominate him at their convention in mid-July. But Trump is facing difficulty in uniting Republicans behind his candidacy. Many Republicans criticized Trump for saying that Judge Gonzalo Curiel is biased because of his Hispanic heritage. Curiel is the judge overseeing the lawsuit against Trump University. Others denounced Trump for his remarks after the recent shooting in Orlando, Florida, that killed 49 people and injured another 53. The candidate tweeted, "Appreciate the congrats for being right on radical Islamic terrorism." The Trump campaign also faces difficulty raising money for the general election. The Center for Responsive Politics reported that Trump's campaign and supporters had raised about $60 million as of May 23rd. In comparison, the opposing campaign and supporters of likely Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton had raised about $290 million. Clinton has already started advertising in several states where she and Trump are expected to have a close race. Trump has not released any ads for the general election yet.
This is what's trending today. The Cleveland Cavaliers won the National Basketball Association championship on Sunday night. In the last game of the seven-game series, Cleveland defeated the Golden State Warriors 93-89, and the victory gave Cleveland its first major sports title in 52 years. The last time a team from Cleveland won a championship was in 1964. Its football team, the Browns, won the National Football League title. For many years, Cleveland sports fans lived with disappointment and watched teams that were not very good. For example, the Cleveland Indians baseball team lost at least 100 of 162 games four times between 1971 and 1991. And at the end of the 1995 football season, the Browns moved to Baltimore in the state of Maryland. It was a heartbreaking moment for many Cleveland sports fans. A new team with the old name returned in 1999, but the new Browns have not been very good. But on Sunday night, when time ran out at Oracle Arena in Oakland, California, the Cavaliers and all the fans could finally celebrate a championship. Andy Borowitz is a comedian from Cleveland. He wrote on Facebook, "Any other Cleveland fans having trouble adjusting to having won something?" That is because Cleveland fans are not used to celebrating sports championships. The victory fulfilled a promise that Cleveland's star player, LeBron James, made to the city. James grew up close to Cleveland in the city of Akron, Ohio. He started his career with the Cavs, but he left Cleveland to play for the Miami Heat for four seasons starting in 2010. When James announced he would return to Cleveland in the summer of 2014, he said he would help the team win a championship. And he did it. James also won the Series Most Valuable Player Award. ESPN calculated there had been 146 sports seasons without a team from Cleveland winning the championship in baseball, football, or basketball. That streak came to an end. And the celebration is just beginning. The Cavs returned to Cleveland on Monday afternoon to get ready for a parade and a big party on Wednesday. Cleveland fans from all over the country celebrated a lifetime of waiting coming to an end. In fact, along with the hashtag NBA Finals and the names of the players trending on Twitter overnight, so was Cleveland. One organization created a graphic showing three front pages from the Cleveland newspaper. One, from 2010, showed James leaving with the headline, "Gone." In 2014, it said, "Home." And on Monday morning, it read, "Believe it." Even President Obama, a noted fan of the Chicago sports teams, posted this on Twitter. What a game and what a series for the Cavs. Happy to see LeBron James bring it home for Cleveland. The celebration is not until Wednesday, but thousands of Cleveland fans went to the airport to greet the team plane on Monday. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA, Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. An apple a day keeps the doctor away is a popular expression in the United States. It may be a common saying, but it is not scientifically confirmed. However, a new study adds to evidence that suggests taking a small amount of aspirin can help to keep the doctor away. Researchers have known for some time that a small daily dose of aspirin can be good for your health. Aspirin can lessen the risk of developing heart disease and even colon cancer. New findings suggest the painkiller may also increase survival in cancer patients by up to 20%. That is, if those patients are receiving chemotherapy as a cancer treatment. Chemotherapy uses drugs to destroy cancer cells. Peter Elwood is with Cardiff University's School of Medicine in Britain. 40 years ago, he was involved in the first study to explore the effects of aspirin in the prevention of heart disease. Elwood's team examined 47 studies for evidence that aspirin helped cancer patients. And they found some.
And there's fairly consistent evidence of a 15 to 20% reduction in death and a reduction in metastatic spread by low-dose aspirin.
By low dose, he means 81 milligrams. The study followed cancer patients for 5 years. Elwood says the evidence is strongest that aspirin delays death among colorectal cancer patients. His team found that aspirin also helped people being treated for breast and prostate cancer. The reason appears to be the chemical salicylate. Elwood says many people have small amounts of salicylate in the body. In about 20% of patients, researchers have found a genetic mutation that may interact with the chemical. The mutation is known as PIK3CA. This change in the structure of genetic material could explain the reduction in colon cancer. Elwood says he was excited with the study's findings. He adds that it is not a cure, but a small sign of better things to come, what he calls a glimmer of hope and encouragement.
I feel very gratified because to people given a diagnosis of cancer, it's not a cure, but it's a glimmer of hope and encouragement to them. So I'm thrilled to have this evidence from the study.
Elwood says that if doctors told him he had cancer, he would not delay in taking aspirin once a day. But he says that decision is up to the individual.
If they asked me personally, what would I do if I had a diagnosis of cancer, I would say I would have no hesitation in taking it. But I do not recommend it to people. I want them to have the evidence and take their own decision.
The only major risk is that aspirin can cause stomach bleeding. But Elwood says it usually does not cause death. He adds that the evidence points to big health benefits of taking a daily aspirin. So for some people, the pros might outweigh the cons. Elwood and his team published the findings in the journal PLOS ONE. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.